Rivers. We're still awaiting Senator Walker, but I think we can go ahead and start on the maybe do introductions and adoption of committee rules. I want to introduce the staff first. To my right is the Administrator Celia Nunez-Flores, and Heather Gravel is the Committee Assistant. So those are the nice folks that make can even make the Irish look intelligent and like they know what they're doing, so I appreciate their help. And I think the first order of business would be the adoption of the committee rules. It's my understanding that these are the same rules we adopted in revenue a little earlier today. It's the same 14 members, so it looks pretty generic.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of committee rules. Second to General Government Committee.
Okay, it's been moved that we adopt committee rules.
Hi. How are you?
So, would you call the roll then, please?
Can I speak to my motion? I would like to speak to my motion.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
I just wanted to say that this is the first time since 1989 I've sat under a Democratic chair. Just so you know, so I'm going through some culture shock. You'll know why.
And it had to be you.
It had to be me. Actually, I was under chair comments. I was going to, I might as well do it now, make the comment that I will be relying on you very heavily, Mr. Vice Chair, because, in fact, you do have the experience. You're certainly a lot older than me, and you have the experience of having chaired the Judiciary Committee and Ways and Means in the past. So your expertise will be very important. And basically, just for all the committee members, I mean, I basically want a very transparent process here. We'll have some easy bills. We'll start out with some easy ones today, but I think we may get some tough ones as time moves on, and I've shared this with the Vice Chair, and I shared it with the rest of the committee that I intend to, you know, make this as open a process as it was intended to be in the first place. So we'll try to let people know as quickly as we know when agenda items will be coming up, and I intend to rely a lot on Senator Menas, his judgment on these bills, which ones we should move forward, which ones we need to sit on for a while. So I'm very encouraged with the makeup of the committee and its totality. Poor Senator Starr is going to have to sit next to me in two committees. So I think he gets hazardous duty pay or something for that.
So moved.
Okay. So moved. Okay.
Second.
So can we call the roll now?
Yeah, are we missing somebody? Nope. Oh, we're just one of the small committees.
Even committees, remember?
Yep.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Vice Chair Minnick?
Aye.
Chair Fulkerson?
Aye. So the rules are adopted, and what's the protocol, Mr. Vice Chair? Do we move into a public hearing now on the first bill?
Yes.
Okay. We'll move into a public hearing on Senate Bill 12. Celia, would you give us an overview of this? Oh, I guess one comment while we're waiting for Celia is that if folks aren't aware of the process, please remember to sign in. And we give deference to anybody that's had to travel over 50 miles. Let them testify first. If you have written testimony, please submit it to Ms. Gravel, the committee assistant. And that's pretty much all I wanted to say in terms of protocol. We had originally had, just by way of information, we had originally had Senate Bill 77 on the list here today, too, but Senator Morissette asked that we delay and reschedule that because he wanted to bring some testimony up to testify on that, so we won't be hearing that today. Okay, with that,
Chair,
go ahead.
Senate Bill 12 is eliminates the Interlibrary Loan Net Lender Reimbursement Program, and this afternoon we have two individuals who will be testifying, if you'd like to call them.
Okay. Jim Shepke, State Library. Nan Hine from the Oregon Library Association. Do you guys want to come up together? Okay. Nan is otherwise known as the library goon. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Nan Heim, here today in support of Senate Bill 12 on behalf of the Oregon Library Association. Our association has just about 1,000 members now who are staff and trustees of all types of libraries throughout the state, school, college, as well as public. Senate Bill 12, which our association strongly supports, comes to you from the Senate Interim Task Force on Library Cooperation, which met this past interim, and I've listed the members of the task force on my written statement, the three senators, Trow, Burdick, and Duncan, as well as a number of members of the library community, including the current president of our association, the past president, and a couple of other leaders. When the task force was created by then-Senate President Gene Durfler, he gave us a strong directive that whatever the task force came up with to enhance library cooperation could not cost any new money. And at first, I think that was a little daunting to some of the library members of the task force. However, it turned out to be a good thing because it forced everybody to evaluate what was being done with the limited resources available for this purpose and to decide what is our highest priority and whether or not that was being met. And it was very quickly concluded that our highest priority now is statewide databases and the access to those for all patrons of any kind of library in the state. We were not doing anything to meet that priority in terms of a statewide basis, and that's what this bill is all about. In order to do that, we would be reallocating federal money. There is no general fund money in this program. And the federal money is currently used for a 10-year-old program that has to do with reimbursing libraries for interlibrary loans. Jim Shepke, the state librarian, is here today, and he can explain. Oh, and so is Senator Burdick from our task force. And with that, I'll conclude and just say that the Oregon Library Association strongly supports this bill, and we urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator Burdick, are you in a hurry, or do you want to endure this painful testimony?
I'll just speak very briefly, Mr. Okay. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I just came to voice my support as a member of the interim task force for this bill. It reflects quite a bit of discussion on how we could increase interlibrary cooperation and improve access for all Oregonians for the maximum amount of material. So now I'll turn it over to the expert.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jim Shepke. I'm the State Librarian Director of the Oregon State Library. The State Library Board of Trustees supports Senate Bill 12. The State Library was privileged to be a part of the Interim Task Force on Library Cooperation. The task force worked very hard over the course of three meetings in the interim, and the bill reflects a good plan to reallocate federal resources in the state library budget to meet the highest priorities for library cooperation in the state. It would involve elimination of an existing program which reimburses libraries that lend more books to other libraries than they borrow for their patrons. And we've had that program for about 10 years. And it's a program that has been valuable in the past, but it was the consensus of the task force that it isn't a high priority for the future. What we would rather do with that federal money is license electronic information for all types of libraries in Oregon using federal dollars as a subsidy to help ensure that every library in the state has access to electronic information over the internet. Currently, there's about 35 small public libraries in the state that don't have this access, and it's very important that all Oregonians have access to electronic information. So the State Library Board supports this bill. It does have a fiscal impact that we have filed a fiscal impact statement for, but it does not increase general fund dollars in the governor's recommended budget. It simply adds some other fund and federal fund limitation to the governor's recommended budget according to our analysis.
Thank you, Mr. Sheffy. Any questions, colleagues? Senator Menace?
Well, I have a question. I'm kind of dumb here, but give me some graphic. How does this help? If I had to explain this to my children, what you're doing, what would you say? I mean, give me the.
And make sure that any Oregonian through their local library can get on the internet and access a tremendous amount of information that isn't free. Not everything on the internet is free. There's a lot of important information that libraries have to pay for. And so this, by licensing this information for the whole state, it does two things. We pay a lot less,
okay,
and it makes it available to every library and not just to the libraries that can afford it.
Okay, so we're licensing information.
Yes.
Correct. Okay, and in doing so, making it available to all the libraries throughout the state. And we're doing away with the old system where there was a reimbursement for libraries that provided more books for transfer or loan than they received, correct?
Exactly.
And then it does a few other things in terms of shifts of funds and so on and so forth.
Yes.
So I understand this has to go to Ways and Means and
yes,
part of the library budget.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Walker?
Yes, thank you. Just two questions. Follow up on what Senator Menace just asked. If you're eliminating the other program, that program, I mean, you're not reimbursing people, but they're still incurring those costs. So who's eating those costs now if they're not getting reimbursed?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, 10 years ago when we started this, this was all sort of new, all this lending of materials, and some libraries felt that they had to be compensated for that. What we've learned over the past 10 years of having this program is that every library benefits from the free flow of information. So in our task force, we heard from libraries saying, you know, we don't really need to be paid anymore to do this. We realize now that this is just a good thing to do. And it's amazing. Some libraries who you would think loan more than they get, it's actually the opposite. Like Multnomah County Library, for example, borrows more than they loan. You wouldn't have predicted that, but that happens. Mm-hmm. And so it's been a learning process over the last 10 years, and we've come to the understanding that we don't really need this compensation mechanism anymore.
Okay, and then the second question, Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm. I assume you've thought of this already, but does this new program qualify for the same funds from the federal government? They're still okay with how you're using them?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, absolutely.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you, folks, very much. That was relatively plain. This is for our first bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Would anybody else like to testify on this? Seeing none, Mr. Vice Chair, I guess we need to
move into a work session.
Does it go to a work session first? All right, we'll close the public hearing, open a work session on Senate Bill 12.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Vice Chair.
I move Senate Bill 12, unamended, to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Menace moves the bill unamended to Ways and Means. To your motion.
Just looks like a good bill. It looks like they've thought through their processes, and I hate to admit this, but I don't go to the public library as often as I probably should. I probably understand this a little bit better, but yeah, sounds like a good bill. I'll get it down there and try to facilitate its advance.
Thank you. So the motion before us is a referral to Ways and Means. Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Sauter?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Vice Chair Minnis?
Aye.
Aye. So the The bill is referred to Ways and Means. Thank you very much. And I hope that I love this Senate Interim Task Force on Library Cooperation. I wonder if they had one on PERS cooperation. Never mind. Thank you. Close the work session on Senate Bill 12. And we will open public testimony on, or a public hearing on Senate Bill 133, eliminate statutory references to corporate division of the Office of Secretary of State. Ms. Nunez-Flores, would you like to give us an outlay of this? Oh, you've got all three here. Okay.
Is that Senate Bill 12 again? Senate Bill 133 provides the Secretary of State to change the name of the Corporate Division of the Secretary of State, eliminate statutory references to the Corporate Division of the Office of the Secretary of State.
Thank you very much. We have Tom Rush and Peter Threlko, do you want to testify together?
Yep.
Okay.
Yes.
Great. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman Corcoran, members of the committee. My name is Tom Rausch. I'm representing the Secretary of State, and with me today is Peter Threlko, who's the Corporation Division Director. And we have written remarks on each of the bills. I thought we would go through these all real quickly at once, but if you want to go one by one, that'd be fine. Whatever the chair's pleasure is.
Well, they're not totally interrelated, so maybe we'll just do them one at a time.
That's fine. Thank you. Just really briefly, Senate Bill 133 is just a simple bill that eliminates the mention of the Corporation Division in the statutes of Oregon Revised Statutes. We're only mentioned as a Corporation Division in two of the 18 different chapters that we administer all or part of. And this bill would allow us to amend our name, change our name in the Corporation Division to a more appropriate name that covers the various functions that the Corporation Division does now. As the testimony indicates, historically, we started out as just a Corporation Division. That's what we did. We registered corporations in the state and that's really was our main function. Then we increased to other types of business entities, and in order to create those entities, they had to register with the Corporation Division. Other things have been put in with this division as the legislature has seen fit to do that. And now our mission is quite a bit different than it was about 40 or 50 years ago. And we'd like to be able to have our name reflect that so citizens can more easily find the services that they expect to find from the Secretary of State's office. And that's really the testimony for that bill. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. And our director here could probably speak better to some of those things than I can.
So, Mr. Rush, it indicates in your written testimony then that the intent of the Secretary of State's office would be to change the name Corporation Division to Commerce Division. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's our initial intent. We want to talk with our partners first before we do anything permanent. But yeah.
Okay. Any questions, Mr. Rush? Yes, Mr. Vice Chair?
Well, the statute currently establishes the Corporation Division of the Office of Secretary of State. You're proposing to do away with that particular title, but you're going to rename it something else, correct?
That's correct.
And where's the authority to rename it?
Chairman Corcoran, Senator DeMiss, it's named under the Secretary of State as all of our... If you look, like for example, in Section 1 of the bill, instead of Corporation Division, it's just Office of the Secretary of State. 99% of our statutory references that the Corporation Division actually function under the elected official of the Secretary of State. Right. It's his responsibility, really, and his authority that we implement And so Legislative Council advised us it would be better to just go under Secretary of State, as I believe other divisions in our agency and other agencies do. So that's why we'd still be under, it would be, the statute would read Secretary of State. It wouldn't read Commerce Division or some other thing that we might bring up.
Right. Do you have any idea why the legislature chose to do this when it was first created?
In Section 1?
Mm-hmm. Why did they name it the Corporation Division?
Chairman Corcoran, Senator Miss, I really don't know exactly.
Okay. They have a good reason.
I could conjecture at the beginning when this section, the business registry information section, was first posited back in, I think it was 87, may have been 89. There was a coordination of six different agencies or six different divisions in the state that would provide information to the Business Information Center in order to establish where it was going to be housed, the actual function and administration of that function. Mm-hmm. They said the Corporation Division as one of those six partners.
Right. But let me understand something then. I mean, I understand what you're saying in terms of the office of the Corporation Division being under the Secretary of State, but if you change this particular law, then you have a business registration information center established within the Secretary of State's office. The primary functions of the center are, and it names two things, correct?
Yes, sir.
Now, you said earlier that the function has become much more than it's, what it was originally intended. Can you help me understand what it is it's become more of and where you're going with this? And it's two things. Sure. I want to know kind of where you're going and where the statutory authority is to do what it is you're doing, because I only see two things here, and hopefully everything falls under that. And then the other thing is, I guess I just want to know, what the mission is, where you're going, what's your direction.
Sure. Thank you. Chairman Corcoran, Senator Minnis, actually, our mission statement is on the bottom of the testimony, but just so you to maybe more specifically talk about the questions. We have the Corporation Division under the Secretary of State label, if you will, there are 18 different chapters of the Oregon Revised Statutes that are administered in our office. Mm-hmm. And this is only one small part under 56.180. Mm-hmm. Is only one small part of the many different functions we do. We have, and perhaps the director would like to speak to this more, but we have basically several programs. We have the business registration program, which is our largest program, and includes many entities. Corporations are just actually now a minority fraction of that. We do more limited liability companies than we do corporations. We also file uniform commercial code filings, which include under Chapter 79.
Not to belabor this.
I'm sorry.
What you're telling me, there are other statutory references to those functions.
Absolutely. That is what I'm saying.
Those don't go away.
All those don't go away.
Changing the name of this little tiny function right here.
That's right.
Okay. I'm fine. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Menes. Any other questions? Mr. Threlkill.
Senator Corcoran, members of the committee, I have no further comments.
Good. Brevity is a good thing. Thank you very much. Would anybody else like to testify on this? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing and go to a work session on Senate Bill 133. Does anybody have any heartache with this?
No,
I don't think so. Senator?
I'll move Senate Bill 133 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
We may have the first bill of the session.
Calendar.
Senate Bill, Vice Chair Menes has moved Senate Bill 133 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
To my motion, Mr. Chair, I want to make sure that I'm doing this right, because the Senate did add a consent calendar. I don't know if that needs to be included in the motion.
I think it comes
if out. We, would it be after the vote, if it's a unanimous vote, that we would then make a recommendation, do you think?
That's the way we did that in the House.
Okay.
That's what
all right.
We do here.
Thank you very much, Senator. Okay. Ms. Gravel, would you call the roll, please?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Vice Chair Minnis?
Aye.
Chair Corcoran?
Aye. So noting a unanimous vote in favor, I would ask the staff to inform. Is that how you do it in the House,
you have
Senator Walker?
To take a vote of us to ask us if we want it to go on a consent calendar. If anybody objects, then it goes on the consent calendar.
Would there be any objection to placing it on the consent calendar? No objection noted, so it will, in fact, be placed on the consent calendar. Thank you very much. Thank you. Okay, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 133, and we will go to Senate Bill 134, a work public hearing. And Ms. Nunez-Flores will give us a little overview.
Senate Bill 134 makes clear the ability to mandate that notaries be trained. Currently, they are being trained, but statute makes it questionable. This bill codifies practice.
Thank you very much. I note that we have two very familiar gentlemen who just testified on the previous bill still here. And also we have Charles Stern of the Oregon Association of County Clerks. Do you want to wait and testify, or do you want to testify with these folks? Come on up. It's a friendly crowd. They seem pretty friendly anyway. They're wearing ties and stuff, so they came there to uptown.
We won't fight.
That's right.
Okay, who would like to start?
Well,
Mr. Rush?
Perhaps I can. Thank you, Senator Corcoran, members of the committee. Again, my name is Tom Rausch. I'm representing the Secretary of State's office. I also supervise the Notary Public section on my day job, the Corporation Division, and I'm the past president of the Notary Public Administrator section of the National Association of Secretaries of State. Basically, saying this bill is near and dear to my heart. Basically, what I'd like to talk about, the Senate Bill 134 is very directly related to the improving the quality of notaries public in the state of Oregon. And what it does is mandate that notaries must get any non-active notaries, in other words, new or notary whose commissions have expired, must have 3 hours of instruction before they can become a notary. We have various means to educate these at low or no cost. In our office, we deliver seminars. We will have a online education system that will be free. And that will be the way we will look at educating notaries, and there are other means as well. We can certify to private vendors who can do value-added kind of instruction and serve the state of Oregon as well. Notaries, I don't know how familiar the committee is with the quality of notaries in the state of Oregon. In 1989, the Secretary of State was required to by the legislature to make sure that the notaries were qualified, at least understood, had read the law, basically. And so they said, you must administer a written exam. And so we did. We had materials that associate with a written exam. As we administered this program, we found that notaries were coming to us saying, I don't know how to do this. We don't know what this means. We don't know what these statutes mean. Can you help us? We also received requests from filing officers and other folks who received documents that had been notarized saying, these notaries are not doing it right. Can you help them? And so we, without actually having any funding to do this, we went and did a increase in education program. We said, okay, we published a guide that was trying to give in real English, what notaries were required to do if they couldn't understand the legalese of the statutes. We created seminars where at first it was just by invitation, people would ask us to come and talk to them, and then we created a statewide system so we could get to everybody who voluntarily wanted to do this. Those efforts have been successful and very, very well received. However, they have only reached a fraction of the notaries that actually are out there. And judging by the kind of complaints and the kinds of things we see in our office and the comments we get from filing officers such as county clerks and other folks, we know there's still a lot of work to be done. nationally, more and more states are looking at or have adopted notary education of some way. Florida, which has the largest number of notaries, over 300,000 notaries, adopted a bill very, very much like this one a couple of years ago. They've had great success. And they believe that this is really helping improve the quality of notaries public in the country, or in their state. We have I'm sure it's evident to you why notaries should know what they're doing when they're notarizing documents. What they do is very, very important, not only in national and state business, but also internationally. And that's one of the reasons that we see a lot of complaints about notaries is through documents that may go out to a foreign country and are not done correctly, or at least the foreign country wants our stamp of approval on this notarization before they let it go out. And so we know that notaries need to be better qualified in order to fulfill their functions, and this is our attempt to do that. And with that, I conclude my testimony, and I turn it over to...
Well, before you we move on, I guess I want to ask a couple of questions just to get on the record, and that is that we have a fiscal impact statement here that basically indicates that there will be a cost in the next biennium, in the 03-05 biennium, of $110,335, that is not anticipated in the governor's recommended budget. Am I to assume that the increase in the registration fee of $5 for four-year commission period is what you use to fund that?
I, Senator Corcoran, members of the committee, I can address that question. Yes, that is
you
correct.
Identify yourself, please.
My name is Peter Threlkell. I'm the director of the Corporation Division for the Secretary of State.
Thank you.
The answer is yes. We did not ask for additional funding in the governor's budget. Those are expenses that we have already been incurring. And what we seek to do with this bill is to establish the funding mechanism that allows us to continue to operate in this manner. We've taken on the function of educating notaries without having previously requested the funding necessary to do so. So as we look at those expenses over the next few years, we want to make sure that our communications with notaries are not interrupted, and that we are able to continue to provide a number of avenues of education to the notary publics.
The other question I would ask, just again to place it on the record, is that one of the questions that is now on the fiscal impact statement form is local mandates. Does the proposal have a fiscal or revenue mandate effect on cities, counties, or special districts that triggers evaluation under Section 15, Article 11 of the Oregon Constitution?
To my knowledge, no.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of Mr. Threlkell?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Vice Chair?
I'm a little concerned about this bill. My primary concern is you're throwing out the open book test.
Oh, sorry.
Chairman
Corcoran, Chairman Corcoran, Senator DeMintz, we are not throwing out any test. The test will still be there.
You're deleting the language, and the examination shall allow questions to be answered on an open book basis. It's deleted. I mean, I don't really care. Frankly, you're going to have a test. I don't care if it's open book or not. I'm kidding on
right.
that part.
Okay.
But what I do want to get to is in Section 2, where it says you're deleting language that says to defray costs incurred by the Secretary of State to process the application made under. Now, that I can see that's somewhat constraining in terms of what you're trying to do with respect to training. But by deleting all of that language, it doesn't appear to me that you're dedicating this money created through the additional raise to this function. In other words, you're deleting the dedicated language and then you're leaving it silent, so the money could go anywhere.
Chairman Corcoran, Senator Minnis, That's a very valid point. This is the way the Legislative Council decided to write it, and we just went with the way they thought would be the best way to write it. Mm-hmm. We'd be happy to look at amending it to, if you wanted to craft something that way, we can do that.
Mr. Chairman, I would just suggest that I think it's good that you're trying to codify what you're doing, and you're trying to find a funding source for that. But I think the way that it's written here, and then increasing the fee from $20 to $25, and you're deleting the language "not to exceed," might raise some red flags with some folks. So I would just suggest that if you're going to do this, you want to codify the training, you want to increase the fee to cover the cost, that it be dedicated specific to that program, so that members don't feel like the shifts, you know, there could be some fungible money in going into other programs or whatnot.
Well, Senator Menace, I think maybe what we'll do then is hang on to this bill and ask the Secretary of State's office to get an amendment. I think that maybe to satisfy Senator Menace's concern that you in Section 2 add language that indicates that to defray the costs associated with the 3-hour public education course. I think that would probably get at his concern.
Mm-hmm. Something like that.
So I guess what I would ask you to do then is go ahead and get that. I don't know, process-wise, do we have them contact Legislative Council?
Well, I think either our staff can do that, or I can do it through my office. And
okay, well, we'll have our staff do that. Celia says she wants to learn how to do this anyway.
Sure.
And we'll get that drafted up, and then when we get the amendment back, you folks look at it and make sure it meets your needs, and then I'll share it with Senator Menace and see if it satisfies him, and then we'll just bring the bill back before us.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
But while we have him here, we might as well let Mr. Stern testify.
Thank you, sir. My name is Charles Stern. I'm the Amhill County Clerk, and I chair the Oregon Association of County Clerks Legislative Committee. As has been pointed out, we discussed with the Notary Division several years ago some of the common errors and mistakes that notaries make which delay commerce. When this comes across our desk, it's waiting to be recorded, and we've got some fatal mistake, then that customer has to take it back, and sometimes it goes back to more than one party to be cured. And so we supported a strong education program to assist notaries in doing a qualified job. Frequently see either the seal is missing completely, or it's misplaced over text and obliterating some of the text of the document. Sometimes we see notaries where they put the seal on, forget to sign it. Then we even had one who thought he could notarize a document by phone, which we suggested that perhaps the Secretary of State's office might want to discuss that with him.
Yeah.
As well did the bar want to talk to him, too. But anyway, so at TOS it was clear that there could be an improved program for providing education to the notaries of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stern. Any questions, Mr. Stern? I'm sorry, Senator Starr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there and this is for any of the panel here, is there an association of state notary publics?
Chairman Corcoran, Senator Starr, there is an association of Oregon, an Oregon Association of Notaries Public. There are at least three that I know of national associations are claiming national membership of notaries. The National Notary Association, which is headquartered in California, the American Society of Notaries, headquartered in Florida, and the United States Notary Association, which is headquartered in Pennsylvania.
Thank you.
Did it, Senator? Okay. Thank you, gentlemen, very much. Senator Menace?
One quick question. My assumption is we come back with an amendment, we'll move the bill unless some other problem occurs. But the amount of money raised here, does that cover the entire cost of the function, or are we still subsidizing the function within the Secretary's budget?
Mr. Thrillkill?
Senator Corcoran, Senator Minnis. Currently, the functions that we provide in the Notary Public area, that program, of all the activities that we do, all the fees that are collected from commissions, different authentications that we do, we're currently covering at about 46% of our costs. So the $5 fee increase will help to defray more of that, but we're very concerned about looking at our internal operations and how we can find more efficiencies and reduce our costs without having to look at fee increases for that whole function.
Okay, now I heard you say was that this $20 you're currently charging covers roughly 46% of your existing cost for the program. Is that correct?
The $20, yes. We have some additional filing fees that are paid for the authentications, different...
But existing resources and
right.
Monies coming in cover 46%. This $5 picks up a little bit more, gets you to 48, 50. You don't have any clue? But we're still subsidizing about 50%.
That is correct.
Of the program. Okay. Thank you.
One question I would have then, Mr. Threlkeld, just to follow up on that. I was trying to do the math on this. If you plan on raising $110,000 in a biennium, that's $55,000 a year divided by four, because these are four-year licenses. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So you're running at around... $13,000 notaries every year?
A little closer to 12,000 notaries. There are currently 44,588 notaries in Oregon.
All right, thank you. It
would be helpful to have some of those facts if we could. Whomever just has to carry this bill.
Yeah, maybe you could bring that back for us so we could walk through the... we already gave it to us.
Have it.
Thank you very much, Senator Starr. It's nice to have the younger generation here to point out to old fogies that they're missing information.
I know who's carrying the bill.
Yeah, now we know who's carrying the bill. That's right. Okay.
Chairman Corcoran, Senator Miss, if I could perhaps clear up possibly miscommunication. The fee increase basically pays for these two things. It costs us about $5 to give each notary a notary guide. They get that every time they get commissioned, and send this flyer out once a year to every notary in the state. And that's really what the fee increase does. The seminars that we hold are not included in that, but they're not really as expensive as the printed and postage is of this. And we anticipate with the new tutorial program that will be online that perhaps those fees will decrease as well, because there will be not as much need for seminars. We don't know for sure. No one has a crystal ball, but Florida had that kind of impact.
Okay, thank you very much, gentlemen, for your testimony. We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 134, and we will await the amendments and have you come forth with the revised bill. Ms. Nunez-Flores pointed out that I did not name a character, being a rookie chair.
One, because it's on consent calendar.
Oh, it's on a consent calendar. Okay, never mind. All right, and now 135, we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 135, and we have the same suspects before us, Tom Rush and Peter Threlkeld of the Secretary of State's office, and Charles Stern of the Oregon Association of County Clerks. Gentlemen. Let me read the brief. Okay. Thank you very much. Ms. Nunez-Flores, would you please tell us what
Senate
this bill is?
Senate Bill 135, notary publics will have the legal authority to notarize electronic copies. Part of a national effort to provide a system to notarize electronic documents allows adoption of rules on how that would happen.
Who wants to go first?
To help us. If I may, Chairman Corcoran, Senator, members of the committee, again from the record, my name is Tom Rausch, representing the Secretary of State. And this bill actually sort of finishes some authorization that the office was given to help digital notarizations, electronic notarizations, if you will. In this age of electronic commerce, we are having more and more requests to and need to have legal documents that require notarizations to be done electronically. And in fact, the federal legislation of e-sign, Electronic Signatures Act, and the Uniform Electronic Transactions Act, which was adopted last session, I believe, by the legislature, all allow for and recognize electronic notarizations. However, Oregon law, current Oregon law, requires that or says that no notary act will be effective without having a rubber seal impression upon that. Now, other than stamping your monitor, that's going to be pretty difficult. So what we suggest and what this legislation attempts to do is to say is to allow for us to, by rule, come up with a strategy that will serve the same functionality as the rubber stamp, but only for electronic documents. And that's very simple. Isn't it?
Well, the question I would have, I remember in 95 we brought forward the electronic signatures for voting because of a disabilities case. But I would wonder if you could just kind of, bill provides that the Secretary of State shall adopt rules necessary to implement this, including rules prohibiting or prescribing use of electronic equivalent. What would be that electronic equivalent?
Chairman Corcoran, I actually don't have an exact proposal to give you, but I will tell you what some people have done.
Do you have experience or knowledge of what other states have done?
Yes, sir, I do. There have been and there are currently a number of pilot projects throughout the country that are looking at filing electronic documents Mr. Sternhurt probably could tell you a little bit more about the county clerk's end of that.
Okay.
But the one type of digital notarization that has been talked about is something that uses digital signatures. And I don't want to get into all the arcane mysteries of the electronic signature technology that's used. But it basically is a setup where you have an encrypted kind of, there are various methods to do this, but you encrypt the document using a key that the notary has, and that's considered their electronic seal. And that document is considered sealed, and if anybody wants to decrypt that document and verify that notary actually did have the authority to notarize that, they could go to the public key authority. It's called a certification authority that has record of that and said, yeah, that person matches up with this particular key, and that's one aspect of the signing process.
Okay, thank you. Senator Menace, look like you had a question. No, you're all set.
Well, maybe I do have one. Which other states use this now? Any other states?
Chairman Corcoran, Senator Menace, there is no state that I know of that has the digital notarization in place. Utah has had a filing, although they've gone back and forth on some of their laws. California has a pilot project. Kansas is implementing a digital signatures administration that they plan to use with their notarizations. There have been some filings in Las Vegas in the county. I can't remember the county that Las Vegas is in. And some additional places around the country that I apologize, I don't recall offhand. And do you know other ones?
Stern.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Charles Stern. I chair the Oregon Association of County Clerks Legislative Committee. Yes, we support this bill as it continues to move forward our effort to keep up with where the world's going in technology. A number of states have already begun accepting electronic recordings. Arizona, California, Florida, Georgia, and Utah
has experimented with a total digital transaction. That meant from the time they started negotiating at the realtor right on through to the recording, there was no paper. It was all digital. And that was kind of a unique, can we really do that type thing? And so it was a really test. And but thousands of documents have been recorded in Arizona, California, Florida, and Georgia. Washington State is working on that. And digital recordings take many different hues as you go from state to state. So I agree with the Secretary of State that the ability to adapt by rule to what is the current and best practice gives that flexibility rather than waiting every 2 years for a legislature to come back and say, how do we deal with this? Because as we speak, there's new technologies happening. Now, the digital signatures are largely done by insurance companies or trusts, and they are the authorizing authority that would give you the signature based on the level of security you want, is the amount of cost to that. But this is just one more step in allowing us to move into that arena.
Senator Minnis?
Well, I'm not sure if you're opening Pandora's box for me here or not. You know, I guess maybe I'm somewhat confused. You've got some states that have done various types of filings electronically, and then you've got an attempt by some folks to try to do it digitally, to do the entire transaction digitally. But I guess what I'm a little concerned about is letting the Secretary of State go off and do their own thing by rule when there doesn't seem to be a very clear path for doing this at all. We've gotten ourselves in some deep trouble trying to create computer systems and other things that end up costing us a small fortune. And I just don't know if we're going down that road or what we're doing here.
Chair Corrigan, Vice Chair Minnis, what I see here is the very limited saying is let them define what a digital electronic notary seal looks like. That's what they're talking about, not designing the whole recording system. All they're talking about is this one element of saying, how do you place a seal on a document when you do it electronically? That's the way I read the bill. And so it's that limited arena that allows us then to move into some the additional steps. I believe that we have statutory authority right now to accept documents that electronically that are not requiring a notary, a reconveyance, satisfaction of mortgage. Oh, there's a number of documents require no notaries. Those require notaries, but they could do that. They could attach their signatures electronically, then do a hard seal and record those. But there are some others that are the UCCs are certainly a non-signed, non-notarized documents. And there are some others that I think could create opportunities to look at, you know, how do we move into the world of electronic commerce.
Financial institutions, I see our banking representative back here. I don't know if this is an issue or not, but I don't know. See, again, it's the obscurity of all of the technology that concerns me to some degree. I'm inclined to say go on and do it and explain it to me later, but from a legislator's perspective, that's not necessarily a good thing. In the words of one legislator, that's the last time I ever vote on something I don't understand.
We could always say that we could send it over to the House and let them fix it.
Yeah, okay, good idea.
Senator Starr?
I don't know, Mr. Threk will have a response to this.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, Senator Minnis, just to add to that last comment, we're really looking with this bill to set the parameters. We don't want to define the technologies that are used by the parties, but really setting the parameters for what that notary seal would be like in an electronic form.
Okay, Senator Minnis?
Yes.
Okay, Senator Starr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I support the bill. I think we should send it on its merry way. I think that quite frankly, Oregon as a state trails many of the states around the nation as it relates to delivering services to Oregonians digitally. I think there's lots of areas where we can save the state resources and provide services to Oregonians in a much cost-effective manner. And I I support this. I think, quite frankly, I'd probably support giving the Secretary of State a lot more broader authority to do rules on lots of the filings that they do so that we can could move more into the digital age. I, for one, don't need to know all about the bits and bytes and mega and killa and whatever all of the technical jargon are. But I just wanted to put that on the record. I support the bill. And thank
Mr. Chair. I have a response.
Senator Miss?
As a junior senator from Washington County. I'll tell you something. You ought to be careful because the technology is a wonderful thing and it facilitates a lot of stuff. But when you work in a business like I do where crimes become, perpetrated in the area of fraud, financial fraud being one of the largest and fastest growing areas of criminal enterprise, and computers are being used for that very purpose. To me, it's a very, very serious topic when we start talking about what we're going to accept as legal, because someday, one of us may find our name on a document that says we just bought, 135-foot yacht in Florida, and, they want the money now. And it's not us at all, it's someone who's used our name, and suddenly we have a complex legal question that we have to respond to. So this is happening more and more frequently in the police department that I work for, where they're having to follow up and trying to figure out who's on first. So, that's my interest, and I happen to know that many of the security systems, the data systems in the state, including LEDS and NCIC, that's a federal system, have security breaches as big, large enough you can drive a Mack truck through. Right now, and that ought to scare the living daylights out of you. So, just so you know.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Starr.
I don't disagree with anything from the senator from Wood Village.
Senior senator.
Oh, I should add that.
Senior
senator from Wood Village just said, I just think that I think that argues, quite frankly, for providing our agencies as many tools as necessary and possible to deal with those issues as they come up.
Just to echo the comments of both senators, I mean, in this era of identity fraud, I mean, I guess Senator Menas does raise a very good point, and I guess I would ask, just for the record, do any of you three gentlemen have any knowledge of fraudulent behavior that's come to light in other states that are using electronic transfer of these seals that you're aware of?
Mr. Chair, Charles Stern. No, I'm not aware of any. What they're doing in this bill, what I see the bill giving authority for them to do, is that they would create those standards that a vendor must meet when he comes to try to sell me software and to sell some notary software. That's what they're trying to do with this bill. One of the things about letting us getting into the world of encryption and digital signatures is that what we receive now is not digitally encrypted. By locking that with a digital key that's insured by some company, we believe it would elevate the level of security than placing a rubber stamp on a document.
Thank you. And for the record, I guess I would ask Representative of the Secretary of State's office to indicate that, to their knowledge, there's no revenue impact, no fiscal impact on this bill. Mr. Rush?
Chairman Corcoran, yes, that is correct.
Okay, thank you very much. Any other questions, folks? We're not keeping you awake, are we, Representative Walker? Senator Walker, I'm sorry. All right, we'll close the public hearing. Shall we open a work session on this? Go for it. Okay. We will open a work session on Senate Bill 135. Do I hear a motion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
About this bill?
I'd move Senate Bill 135 to the floor if they do pass recommendation without amendment. And I'd add that in the event that it got unanimous support, that we add it to this consent calendar.
Senator Starr moves Senate Bill 135 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any comments? Senator Walker?
Just there was an awful lot of questions, and I don't know if I put it on the consent calendar.
I think I'll raise that issue, too. Let's do the vote, and then I do think, actually, that you're correct. I had the same instinct that there would probably be questions asked about this. So, Ms. Gravel, would you call the roll, please?
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Vice Chair Minnick?
Aye.
Chair Corcoran?
Reluctantly,
aye.
Chair Corcoran? Aye. The bill passes unanimously. Senator Starr, I actually share some of the same concerns that Senator Walker raises. I don't have a big dog in that fight. I mean, if you really wanted to move it to the consent calendar, but I would ask maybe that that you carry it in a bipartisan effort to show that government efficiency exists on both sides of the aisle and both sides of the building.
Certainly.
Maybe we could have you carry it as a government efficiency measure, and that way we will get the first bill to the floor. So with that, Senator Starr will carry, and we will close the the work session on Senate Bill 135, and I believe we're adjourned till Wednesday. We'll be doing a PERS overview Wednesday, just to catch folks up on the PERS issue. We don't have any PERS bills assigned to this committee as of now, and of course, with the shared leadership, we have the potential of that bill going to the default committee, which would be rules. I spoke to the majority leader, Representative Knope, last Thursday, and he assured me that they were going to try to move some of the easier PERS bills over as quickly as possible. I told him that what we would commit to as a committee is to try to get the orientation for PERS done so that if bills did come over, that we wouldn't have to waste any time in getting them moved if we could get them moved. So that's the reason for the PERS overview on Wednesday, and it's not because we have any bills in front of us at this point. And with that, we're adjourned. Thank you.
All right.